Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we're going to invite you, all our listeners, to take part in a journalistic investigation. Simple question: how many SUVs are there in the New York City area compared to regular cars? That's right, we want you to do the reporting here. We want you to go outside your house or building and count how many cars on your block are SUVs compared to the total number of cars parked. Once you have the numbers, you can go to our website, WNYC.org, and post the results on our comments page. We're going to give you a week to do the counting, but please only do it once. Then we'll tally up the numbers and talk about what the results mean here next week. Got that? We're asking you to be the reporter here. How many SUVs are on your block and how many cars overall? Just post the numbers at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, you may have heard about this concept before. It's something called crowdsourcing, where a job or a task is assigned out to a crowd. It's also an emerging phenomenon in newsrooms throughout the country, as newspapers and TV stations now look for new ways to adapt to a Web 2.0 world, a participatory online world. So here with us now to explain the concept more and talk us through the assignment that we're giving you is Wired magazine writer Jeff Howe. He actually invented the term crowdsourcing last year, and he's been tracking its many different uses since then. His article in the current issue of Wired magazine looks at crowdsourcing in the newsroom, and he joins me now. Jeff, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much. Always a pleasure.
You invented the word crowdsourcing.
I did, yeah.
How'd you come up with it?
I had been giving a presentation to a bunch of executives, sometimes Wired Marketing, like to trot out us to do a behind the reporter's notebook. And at the last minute, I totally switched the topic, and I'd become obsessed with user-generated content. And I just happened to type in. I said, well, what happens if I just search for user-generated and not user-generated content? And all these interesting things, examples came up in the sciences and product development. And I realized that it wasn't just about people creating their own advertisements or people creating videos on YouTube. And I was talking to my editor, and he said, it's like outsourcing the crowd. I said, or, you know, crowdsourcing.
Huh. There it was. And sometimes the best inventions come spontaneously.
I didn't even think that much of the word.
So as you indicate in that answer, this is not just something for journalism. There's crowdsourcing or user-generated, in effect, crowdsourcing going on in science, you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Got an example?
Sure. Procter & Gamble, which was, you know, there's a term that science departments use, corporate science departments use, called not invented here, which is, you know, the idea of the arrogance of the anything that we didn't invent. Is, you know, can't be any good. And the joke at Procter & Gamble was always not invented here was invented here, because Procter & Gamble employs, you know, I think now they're around to 9,000 corporate scientists, you know, a massive number. They're all very smart. They went to great universities. But recently, Procter & Gamble realized that our 9,000 scientists can't possibly be as smart as the 1.5 million scientists we could tap into using open networks. And so they started what's called broadcasting, or now it's even being called crowdcasting, the problems that have stuck them. And what they found is that about 30% of the problems, of the scientific pickles that stump their 9,000 corporate R&D scientists, they're able to solve by doing this. So
let's get back to journalism.
Sure.
Your article in Wired looks at how the country's largest newspaper chain, Gannett, is using its readers now. Is this their strategy to stave off the industry-wide decline in print readership?
It's one of their strategies. I think that newspapers, Gannett included, have a pretty small window in which they can capture a demographic, basically 18 to 30-year-olds, that are not newspaper readers. And the demographic under that are even less inclined to read newspapers. No one doubts that print itself is going to, go the way of the telegraph. What they're trying to do is become a go-to destination online. And part of that involves engaging their readers.
So, Gannett, are they doing something in particular?
They're using crowdsourcing, as I would define it, at least in two different ways. They're using crowdsourcing to get user-generated content, people you know, what they're finding is that people will write about the local PTA meeting or you know, their children's fifth grade play. These little things that they can't really afford to send reporters out to, but people will write about them, and then they'll post it up on their website, and sometimes even include it in sort of suburban editions of the newspaper.
You give the example from Cincinnati in your article of something called Cincy Moms.
Exactly, yeah. And Cincy Moms is really just forum posts, but it's been incredibly popular. I mean, explosively popular in Cincinnati, because although there's a lot of mom sites on the web, there were no Cincy mom sites. And this is sort of the intersection between groups formed around affinity online and groups formed around geography. Geography is really coming back. It's come roaring back online. And there's a big advantage to talking to other moms who are in your area.
We can take a few phone calls for Jeff Howe of Wired Magazine. Anything you wanted to know about crowdsourcing? Have you taken part in any of these projects or anything that sounds like this, but you didn't know there was a word for it? Maybe you have an idea for an investigation using the crowd of you, our listeners, in addition to the one that that we're launching here. We can take your ideas now. Call 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692 for Jeff Howe of Wired Magazine on crowdsourcing here, or post a comment or a question on our webpage at WNYC.org. So what we're asking our listeners to do here as our first crowdsourcing experiment is go out and count the number of SUVs on your block and then report the findings on our website. Again, we're looking for two numbers, and for the moment, just the numbers. We'll put up a new comments page next week for you to comment on what they mean. But for now, just post the number of cars overall on your block and the number of SUVs on your block. Can you give our listeners any advice as they undertake the project?
Well, you already said it, which is just, for the time being, constrain yourself to just reporting the numbers. I think that the danger with projects like this is that what makes crowdsourcing so powerful is that it's impossible to overestimate the amount of fervor and passion that people have to participate in the media. I think that on one hand, you see the dissatisfaction with mainstream media, but what people don't realize is people's desire to participate. It can be a little tough to restrain oneself, I think.
And yeah, so we're not soliciting opinions right now. We think the page will look really cool if people just post the numbers on your block, and we'll see all those comparisons, and it'll be kind of a statistical thing. It'll be interesting to look at. And then, believe me, we will open it wide and solicit opinions as we always do once we get this in next week. And we are asking you to do this in the next week. So by next Thursday, do this just one time on your block. Go out and see how many total cars are parked on your block and how many of those are SUVs, and post those two numbers to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And I should also say that we're giving people the option to take photos. This is optional, but if you want to include visual documentation in your reporting or anything that's visually interesting from this block of yours, the instructions are on our website about how to upload that and tag it so it shows up on our photo pool.
I have a spontaneous idea. I bet if you asked your listeners, I bet someone out there could create a really cool Google API for you.
API means?
Well, it's like a mashup. So they'll take your data and they'll put it onto a Google map, and then you guys can post it online so people can go to the page and they can see the data, so they can see where the SUVs, like, are all the SUVs parked, on the Upper East Side or Fort Greene or Bushwick? Who knows? I couldn't begin to speculate.
That'll be fun. Okay, that's the next step. you don't have to do. Don't get confused. Just go do the simple thing, and we'll take it from there.
Sorry,
Ted in Larchmont. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ted.
Hello. I have a question. I'd like to hear your opinion about it. Just it seems like the crowdsourcing is a great idea, but I wonder about sort of its role within media consolidation, and it's the difference between for-profit and not-for-profit uses of it. I mean, if Procter & Gamble makes a lot of money from, someone else finding some intractable problem, the solution to it, who really profits from it?
It's really a good question, including, does crowdsourcing equal outsourcing?
Mm-hmm. It's an excellent question, and, it's sort of a case-by-case basis, really. In the example of Innocentive, which is the network that or one of the networks Procter & Gamble uses, the scientists are pretty well compensated. The payouts for solutions run between $15,000 and $100,000, and these are sometimes solutions that scientists only spent a day or two on. So, but in plenty of crowdsourcing examples, including the one Brian Lehrer is using, people aren't receiving money. It's not as if WNYC is going to be making scads of cash off the backs of people's labor. But there are examples. I think people need to be really wary. I mean, already certainly, I think big corporations are sort of licking their chops at the possibility of using crowdsourcing as a cost saving measure. I don't think it will be one.
So someone's already called in to ask, do trucks count as SUVs?
I wonder that, too. I did my count this morning.
You know, I would say no. So if somebody's got, like, a dump truck parked on your block in Cobble Hill, I would say that's not an SUV. They've got it for some reason other than driving around every day. You'd have to use some of these things. Obviously, there are shades of gray in real life. And if you think there's... there's a little pickup that people use as their primary vehicle. If it looks like it's that kind of thing, then count it. But in some of these gray areas, you'll have to use your judgment. Ed in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, hi. I just had something to add to the crowdsourcing thing. When I ran an auto repair shop in Philadelphia, we subscribed to a service called the IATN, which was the International Automotive Technicians Network. And for a nominal fee every month, you could post a problem child vehicle with an issue that you couldn't solve, and it would be looked at by literally thousands of other technicians and master technicians throughout the world. And if they had seen the problem before, then they would post the solution or suggestions for how to address that issue. And in return, they asked you to look at all these other postings that would come every day. And if you had seen an issue, then you would post and help somebody else out. And I found that it was, particularly in the age of extremely intricate computer-driven cars, it was a great asset in rapidly repairing people's vehicles when no one human being could possibly know everything about every vehicle that was being sold in America.
That's great. So this might not be the first area that many of our listeners think crowdsourcing would apply to, but it's crowdsourcing for auto mechanics.
Yeah, it was absolutely invaluable when you got in, something like a foreign vehicle that had a really bizarre problem, or even a domestic vehicle where they had indulged in a little bit of tricky engineering.
Interesting. Thank you for that, Ed. Samuel in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Samuel.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call, Brian. Excellent show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to raise the point of comparison between what we're now calling crowdsourcing and the Founding Fathers' original conception of democracy, and that was that no one person could ever have absolute comprehensive insight into the way things worked, and so we had to defer to a plurality of actors. And I think it's interesting that technology is beginning to catch up, so to speak, to the ideas of democratic participation that our Founding Fathers so eloquently laid out.
Well, we hope it could be that at its best. Jeff Howe from Wired, do you take it that far in your thinking?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that's its promise, its potential. I mean, we'll see whether or not it'll be exploited for, ill gain, or whether or not, it will emerge.
And we just saw, I mean, this is related to the YouTube debate that they had on CNN last night, right?
Absolutely.
Or the other night. So that individuals in our democracy can have more of a say in a way that technology makes it now easier for the centralized media to accelerate.
Yeah. I think there was a consensus that the questions were much more interesting than the answers. The questions were great.
But then again, Joe in Maplewood is much more skeptical. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
Great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to raise the point about crowdsourcing and mass media. If you recall last week when that steam pipe exploded in Midtown, a large number of photographs that were published in the daily papers came from people who either had small digital cameras or cameras in their cell phones, because they were on the scene when it occurred. And that's a great thing. You get the immediacy of, somebody's in close proximity to the action.
Right.
And that helps to democratize the media and give people the chance to participate. But what I'm concerned about, I'm a professional photographer. I'm also president of a photographer's trade association called ASMP. It's the American Society of Media Photographers, formerly magazine photographers. But I'm concerned about how much we can trust people who are not really photojournalists to do the reporting, because it leaves open the possibility that while many of these pictures are clean and honest, what if someone's doctored something? How will a receiving newspaper or media outlet, website, broadcast network, etc., know?
Right. The word is vet in our business. How do we vet the information for its trustworthiness, its reliability, its accuracy? And sure enough, Jeff, I mean, there's no way that we could go to every block that's posted on our website in this little project and count the SUVs for ourselves and know if people are hyping the numbers.
It's absolutely true. I mean, yeah, news outlets are already having a hard time vetting. You have your Jason Blairs and plenty of photography scandals where professional photojournalists are doctoring their photos. So, I think that systems for vetting the vetting user contributions will have to be put into place. And in the end, there's a lot of trust that's involved. There's no doubt about it.
But that's also because Joe raises an important point. Why a way that journalists are looking at this is pro-am journalist, right? Pro-am journalism, professional-amateur partnership in a journalism project, like a pro-am golf tournament where professionals and amateurs play. This is pro-am journalism. The professionals, it seems to me, have a certain set of roles here. And one of those roles is to do what amateurs can't do, and that is to spend our resources to sufficiently verify information to know that we're getting that, you know, all this valuable data that we're getting from many, many sources actually means what it appears to mean.
The sort of first emergence of citizen journalism is there was kind of this pie in the sky idea that citizens would kind of spontaneously publish that their findings and sort of just spontaneously create this journalism when in fact that doesn't really happen as we found at backfence.org, which was an attempt at this. Recently folded. So I think the conventional wisdom now is turning that some professional input, some professional packaging, systems of vetting, that professionals will be needed.
And that is where we leave it with Jeff Howe from Wired Magazine. And again, our crowdsourcing assignment for you, if you choose to accept it, go and count the number of cars on your block and the number of SUVs among those cars and post them to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show between now and next Thursday. Jeff, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And we will speak next to Governor Spitzer's spokeswoman, Christine Anderson, about that whole mess taking place in Albany. Stay with us.